Hello and welcome to the K-Scope podcast. Billy Reeves here. The new album from the Pineapple Thief, Magnolia, is out now. We'll hear from Bruce Sword, the band's main man, shortly. This track is available as a free download and it's entitled Simple As That.
I want to take you with me. What's wrong? What's wrong with that? Put yourself within me. What's wrong? What's wrong with that? You tell me get it out now. What's wrong? What's wrong with that? I've seen
from the Pineapple Thief. That's called Simple As That, and that can be downloaded for free from K-Scope's SoundCloud page. See kscopemusic.com for details. Now, recently I popped over to Bruce's studio down in Somerset to speak to the man and started by asking him that after 10 albums, where he thinks the Pineapple Thief are at now.
Every year and every album we just learnt. And we always look back and think, we've got to make this better. And that's all that our energy is focused on every year, every new album, every new tour. We've got to make it better. So where we are now is a culmination of 10 albums worth of learning.
There's a new drummer. And this was made a big fuss of by everybody in the office. Why is it such a big deal that you now have a new drummer? Who is this man?
A guy called Daniel Osborne. He's got an amazing musical drive, and he kind of gave us a real kick up the backside. Me personally, you know, unusually for a drummer, he's got a really good sense of songwriting as well. Obviously a bit controversial.
Well, it's often the way with the drummer, isn't it? The drummer is the engine room in a way. The drummer is the one that often cuts out the fat.
Yeah, and I think
stops the noodling.
He did, and so that's why on the album he's got the production credit, because he came in with so much energy, took my songs and listened to them, and just said, and listened to all the back catalogue, and said, "Bruce, the magic that you had in the early years, you know, there's room for that in these new songs." Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that what we've done is gone back to the beginning, because we haven't, but I think that I forgot some of my sort of more positive side of my songwriting. I had lost somehow. Yeah, and he sort of brought that back.
Mm. No, it's a really good point, I think. And I think that permeates through the record. There's you have a very spectral and special and unique, I think, singing style. There's you can hear the influences, but this album I was particularly taken by the singing. There's bending notes, there's skipping, there's a lot more singing on this record. Was that a conscious thing? Or
I think all of a sudden I realised I could sing.
Yeah, you
and
can.
Yeah. I think as a songwriter, I was always a guitarist that had to sing. And then I realised after maybe years of playing on stage and singing in the studio, I realised, wow, I've actually got control of my voice and I can do things. And again, when I was thinking, where can I take this 10th album to the next level? How can I do it? The vocals was the obvious one. So the songwriting process was the same, acoustic guitar and voice, except the voice became almost more important than the guitar. And so, yeah, I think I'm glad that has come across in a record, because, you know, the vocal is the top line, isn't it? That's the hook in a lot of modern music. So it was important to, you know, get the most out of it.
Yeah, well, no, get the most out of yourself as well. It's very special, I guess. I'm very envious that you got to work with a string section. How did that come about? What was that like? How did that work?
Well, the first time that I worked with real strings was for the last album, All the Wars, and I was introduced to a guy called Andrew Skeet, keyboard player with Divine Comedy, but his career is made from string arrangements. And So we hadn't met before, so the first time we met was when we did the session in Prague, and we got on really well, and we kept in touch since then. So this time, the process, I'd learned so much about working with a string section, got in contact with him, and he came back and says, "Great, yeah, of course, I'd love to work with you," because now he knew me, whereas before it was like, well, who is this guy? Yeah. What am I letting myself in for?
Yeah.
And because I trusted him so much, and I was saying about sort of taking risks, and it was a calculated risk, and I knew it wouldn't go wrong. Mm-hmm. But I deliberately didn't write any string arrangements when I did the songs.
Did you before then?
I did before.
I wrote suggestions,
right. And then I said, "Look, you
reel it up.
Yeah, here's the basis." But this time I just said, "Right, here's the song. There's not obviously it sounds quite bare. That's because I can hear the strings. Oh. But I'm not the string arranger. I haven't spent my career, you know, obsessing with strings. Andrew has, so I let him do what he was best at, and I'm really glad I did.
Well, it moves between the top line. I think there's two things are simpatico. A risk of letting light into magic. You say a calculated risk. Is that because it takes up quite a lot of the album's budget?
Well, yes. I mean, there's no denying that to make a good sounding record, a great sounding record, a decent budget is useful. I mean, you can spend tons of money and make a terrible sounding record. Mm. You know, that's happened throughout the history of music. But for this, we had the budget. We're so lucky to be on K-Scope, who supported us.
what is buried, buried deep inside of you. 'Cause you gave everything you could. You gave everything you could. Know what was about to tear itself.
This time we spent quite a lot of money on getting someone in to mix it.
Right, okay, so post-production,
right, right. Yeah, and the rest I did here. So we did. I did invest in my studio, but the guitars and vocals and everything we could do relatively cheaply, but we knew, and again, you learn where you need to spend the money to make a classy sounding record.
Was it difficult for you to let go?
It was really...
Or was it easier?
No,
for you?
No. I was absolutely terrified. But I knew that after 10 albums, I was prepared, again, to take a risk. Mm. The only reason that I trusted... The guy's name is Adam Noble. I trusted him to mix it was because he engineered the drum recording session.
Oh, right, okay.
Because for me, that engineering an album, the drums are always the most complicated. Mm. And he's quite got a great track record for drum engineering. So we got him in, and I just got on with him so well. We had exactly the same taste of music. We were just on the same wavelength. So straight away, I trusted him. I said, and I asked him, was he available? And he knew that we didn't have, the budget. But he worked with us, which was really, really nice of him. So,
but presumably then, a couple of times, was it the last time, the time before I saw you, that you were going through that phase of the album with Adam. So presumably he was sent, you weren't sort of like sitting there with big knobs. He was sending you stuff, you were listening to it and sending it back.
So we tracked it and prepared all the sessions and sent them to him. And then it was literally... 2 weeks later, he'd send the first test mix back.
Fresh ears.
Yeah, completely. And again, he said, Have you got any rough mixes? And I said to him, I don't want you to hear the rough mixes. I want you, just because I trust you. You like the same stuff that I like. And I think he appreciated that.
Did he make any arrangement decisions though? Did he do edit points or taking bits in and out? Because that must be quite difficult, because that is part of the songwriting, isn't it?
It is. And again, I said to him, if you think things are working, or if you bring things up and they're not working, then chop them, you know, because we can always come and say, oh, where's that bit?
Put it back.
But actually, he, like you say, fresh ears, you know, I'd been obsessed, immersed in these songs for 18 months. Mm. I was quite happy, actually, at that point to switch off and just say, look, here they are.
Yeah.
Here's my baby.
Because there's no fat in them. That's something else we discussed.
Yeah.
Did that come from the writing stage, or did it come a bit later? Did you think, right, I'm gonna make my point here. I'm going to make my point lyrically. I'm going to make my point melodically here.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to move on to the next thing. There's still movement. There's still a lot of interesting ideas, but there's no waste on this, right?
No.
Is that deliberate?
Yeah, completely. And I think as I've matured as a songwriter, mm-hmm. I just felt that I could say what I needed to say in a short space of time. And every time I thought, well, actually, this album's starting to take shape. And we're talking 3-4 minute songs. The longest song is just over 5 minutes. At no point did I feel that I wanted to write a longer song, because to be brutally frank, I just got bored. You know, I said, look, I've said what, if you want to make this song longer, just play it again, because, you know, so.
How are you going to do it live then? Because we've spoken about the strings, we've spoken about a new dynamic from the lad playing the drum kit. Yeah. There's quite a lot of gigs coming up, you know, the band are getting much more popular now. What's your thinking about the balance between having the live strings on the computer, playing the string parts? What are your thoughts about how you're going to do it live now?
Well, we're going to do it as live as we can. There's some tracks where the strings are, you know, Andrew's arrangements are so integral that we're probably going to find a way to bring them to the stage. I don't want us to rely on, you know, too much technology or too many backing tracks, things, you know, which seem to be quite common now with bands, because we love playing live and we love having
things go wrong, can't it? That would be
well, exactly. Yeah,
it?
That's what makes gigs exciting now. Yeah. You never know when.
You never know when it's going to fall apart. Yeah.
One of these days you'll come up, 'cause one of these days you'll come up for me. Cause one of these days you'll come up. Cause one of these days you'll come up for air. Cause one of these days you'll come up for air.
The Pineapple Thief, Breathe. And before that, you heard the title track, Magnolia. The album is out now. My thanks to Bruce Sword for his time. And you can hear the album in its entirety at Classic Rock Magazine's website, classicrock.teamrock.com, or over at the K-Scope site. Classic Rock Magazine had the album as their number one in the Playing in the Office picks, and said in a review, and I quote, Magnolia is a gorgeous album, immaculately produced and assembled with real love and imagination, unquote. Now, the Pineapple Thief will be on tour through November and December, through firstly Germany, then a night in Paris, then on to the Netherlands, and then in the first week of December to the UK. I'll see you at the London show, 3rd of December, up there at the Islington Academy. Now, in the next podcast, we'll hear from North Atlantic Oscillation. They've got a new album coming out. There'll be some music from the new Lunatic Soul album and an interview also with this next group, I Am The Morning, K-Scope's new signing from Russia, brought to the label's attention by Daniel Kavanagh of Anathema, who says, and I quote, in Mariana, they possess a beautiful, talented and charismatic vocalist, and in Gleb, they possess the single greatest pianist I've ever met in my life, unquote. The album is out now on K-Scope. It's called Belighted. It was recorded and mixed by Marcel van Limbeek of Tori Amos fame. The album also features Gavin Harrison of Porcupine Tree on drums. Check this out then. This is I Am The Morning with Os Unatum. Speak to you again in October. Ta-da!
I'm